Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of souls.
If you enjoy our show and you find our research interesting, please leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform. Something that small really does go a long way in helping us out. You can find more about us and the research that we do by heading over to Instagram and searching our name. As always, thank you so much for joining us tonight. These days, in 2024, true crime is so much a part of our everyday media that it is a category of its own. It seems like all of the event series, 10-part specials, television seasons, movies, and documentaries regarding the subject have been around forever. A part of the endless soap operas, soaps, game shows, reality TV, and all the other usual TV stuff on the box. But in all actuality, this is not the case. In fact, it's the norm for millennials and after, but before that, it wasn't even heard of. In fact, a Pew Research Center study from April to September 2022 showed that true crime is by far the most common podcast topic. Even more, 24% of the top 451 ranked podcasts in the United States, United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, Germany, Norway, Spain, France, and Belgium across Apple and Spotify are about, yep, true crime. The format we now see and have grown to love simply wasn't around prior to the 1980s, however. It was a product of the last 40 years. The emergence of true crime television came in its original format when a weekly series, which was a series built around real-life criminal cases and interviews with the people who were a part of them, but also featured reenactments of the crimes, had never been done before. So this was an entirely new format. But one sunny day in the 1980s, this happened. It became a reality to millions. A series emerged that would not only showcase true crime, but it would also present stories of ghosts and UFO encounters and everything in between. By now, you are starting to get a feeling of what this original series might just be. One where the theme song would trigger PTSD and likely still make the hairs on your body stand on end to this day. Where most children my age who were lucky enough to hear or see it would experience nightmares, fascination, and a lifelong interest in its subject matter. That series is Unsolved Mysteries. It was a series so popular that it changed not only the popular culture of its day, but has affected the pop culture of the cultural zeitgeist moving forward, and in more ways than you likely realize. The way law enforcement conducted their investigations would also be impacted, and the way the public perceived crime and mystery is very much dictated to by this original series. So relax into your armchair, pop on some headphones, or find a quiet place somewhere that you can listen to tonight's nostalgic trip down memory lane. Tonight we are going to talk about Unsolved Mysteries. Unsolved Mysteries began life as a crime television special on America's NBC television network in 1986. Back then, it wasn't hosted by Robert Stack, the face we associate with Unsolved Mysteries today. Nope, that would come later. At the time of its inception, it was hosted by David Burney and his then-wife, Meredith Baxter Burney. Both were actors synonymous with various film and television roles throughout the 1970s and 80s. The idea for Unsolved Mysteries came from the minds of creators and TV producers John Cosgrove and Terry Dunmira. The concept behind Unsolved Mysteries was simple. It would create a criminal or mysterious incident and interview the people who were involved in the real-life incident, as well as law enforcement and other officials who were part of the investigation. This format was fresh and extremely intriguing for viewers, and having the law enforcement and investigative authorities corroborate the story, giving it its rightful seriousness, provided each episode with a legitimacy and fear factor that gripped its viewers. The show was also a way to get information, tips, and case leads on cases that had possibly run out of steam or gone cold at the time the episode had aired. So, with vigilant viewers ready to call in, many cold cases were given new life and new directions to go in, thanks to additional minds and eyes on the crime. Remember, Unsolved Mysteries was years before America's Most Wanted and television network crime specials that would air and lead to criminal convictions and even create additional spin-off shows that branched out into other areas, to not just missing people. Whilst America's Most Wanted drew its idea from the British television show Crime Watch, which had been running on UK screens since 1984, America's Most Wanted borrowed heavily from the tone and feel of Unsolved Mysteries too. In 1987, the very first Unsolved Mystery aired as a TV special hosted by Raymond Burr, whom viewers knew from the crime drama series Perry Mason. Over the next few years, six more TV specials would air, with Carl Malden hosting the first two, and the legendary and iconic Robert Stack stepping out of the fog to host the last four, thus cementing himself as the voice and face of the series going forward. Initially, Stack wasn't as expensive as Raymond Burr or Carl Malden, and whilst a huge hit with the public, it was this reason that Stack actually got the permanent gig to present. Personally, and thinking back to those dark winter evenings watching the show with my auntie throughout the 1990s, I couldn't think of anyone but Robert Stack in that role, much less hear someone else's voice doing the narration for the episodes. The show creators wanted viewers to associate the hosts with heroic types from the world of law enforcement and give the series a strong air of credibility and honesty. So it was no accident that they cast three hosts who all came from realms of crime TV, such as Perry Mason, Mike Stone from Streets of San Francisco, and of course, Elliot Ness himself. What's interesting though, is that even though Robert Stack fit the bill entirely as to what the show creators were looking for, having previously starred in shows such as The Untouchables, Police Story, Most Wanted, and Strike Force, it was Robert Stack's voice and him adding to the creep factor of the show for what he is most remembered for. You knew that the moment he slowly walked out of the smoke and shadows that you were in for something chilling and eerie. The series held extra water and truly benefited from the fact that it was both directed by and creatively involved a number of experts from the world of documentary filmmaking. Names like David Vassar, who ended up directing around 100 episodes of the show, many involving UFOs and other similar such strange phenomenon, and also John C. Joseph, who focused more on crime, murder, and disappearances. As a regular series, it was also relatively inexpensive for NBC to develop and produce. This was because the townsfolk involved and law enforcement featured in each story were usually anxious to help the show in any way they could in order to get featured. This was because it would bring eyes to the crimes and mysteries that they were all willing and trying to get answers to. Law enforcement would enthusiastically offer to be on screen in the reenactments to ensure accuracy, but additionally, they would provide vehicles and locations to the production crew. A large part of the eagerness from law enforcement's perspective, as well as obviously gaining support from the public and helping solving their cold cases, was also to provide positive PR for the law agencies and departments involved, giving a positive view of them and their work to the general public. Police would even help with keeping areas clear for filming or closing down certain areas for the production team. This was not something normally done free of charge. It was something that normally cost television and film productions thousands of dollars in payments to the cities and counties where they wanted to film. This wouldn't always be straightforward and work out so well, however. On occasion, while a significant amount of local police divisions had been allocated to support the filming of Unsolved Mysteries, actual crimes did occur, which allowed for a number of criminals to get away with little resistance or pursuit. Somewhat embarrassing for the local police department, but also something that the production team were keen to keep secret given their role in wanting to solve or prevent crime. The reenactments filmed for Unsolved Mysteries are also quite interesting in themselves. The series would often rely on the actual people involved in the real crime being depicted to play themselves in the reenactments. But this often meant that in the majority of those episodes, the acting was interesting to say the least. Though, acting aside, it couldn't have been easy for everyday citizens who had experienced cases of missing persons and loved ones or been involved in horrific murders to then go on national television and reenact the trauma of what had happened to them during one of, if not the most challenging and harrowing experiences of their lives. Their involvement in those reenactments was admirable at the very least. The Unsolved Mysteries production filmed on location for a great number of episodes, thus meaning the showrunners would usually look for local talent when it came to actors for the reenactments. They would commonly utilize local theatre groups and acting classes. Local actors, of course, would jump at the chance to appear on the show, as it was a chance to appear on network television across the whole country, or even internationally. One of those actors, you might recall, was a young actor by the name of Matthew McConaughey. McConaughey appeared in a Series 5 episode from 1992, where he played a murder victim named Larry Dickens. McConaughey later stated that the real-life killer was apprehended just 2 weeks after the episode aired in December of that year, partly in thanks to tips from the public that were provided off the back of the show. If you get the opportunity to track down the episode, give it a watch, especially if you like to see McConaughey appear for most of the screen time with his shirt off. I think it's on YouTube, I believe it's episode 12 of season 5, if that will help you. This episode was McConaughey's first acting job, which he followed up shortly afterwards with an appearance in Richard Linklater's Dazed and Confused, followed by Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Next Generation with Renee Zellweger. This, of course, was more than 20 years before his Oscar win for Dallas Buyers Club. The following year, on Unsolved Mysteries, actor Daniel Dae Kim, the well-known television actor from such shows as Lost, Hawaii Five-O, Hellboy and The Good Doctor, also appeared in a reenactment. The segment was a piece about the murder of Soo-ya Kim, where Daniel Dae Kim played Soo-ya Kim's brother-in-law. Additionally, in 1998, during the 10th season of Unsolved Mysteries, rock singer Jon Bon Jovi appeared in an episode as an interview subject. The segment he appeared in was about the murder of Catherine Cornelius. Cornelius was the six-year-old daughter of Bon Jovi's tour manager. Bon Jovi also contributed a song that he had written in memory of the little girl titled August 7, 415, which is the day and time of her death. This case, unfortunately, still remains unsolved to this very day. A number of other famous faces appeared in the show over the years too, including Henry Rollins, Cheryl Haynes, Scott Lawrence, and members of New Kids on the Block. Some actors who appeared in the show and featured as criminals would also run into issues in the real world themselves. Amusingly, in one particular instance, an unnamed actor actually had police show up to arrest them. This was due to a tipster reporting them after seeing them on the show and clearly not being able to differentiate an actor pretending to be a criminal but not being the actual criminal in its respective case. Luckily, the situation got resolved, and whilst amusing now, this happened often enough that producers of Unsolved Mysteries eventually started giving actors a card that they could show to law enforcement, advising they weren't the real murderer, but only played one on television. It contained a telephone for law enforcement to call that put them through to the Unsolved Mysteries production team. On the flip side of that, however, there are also examples such as this one, when in 1990 two men came into audition for roles as thieves during a segment. The show producers were surprised, if not a little unnerved, at how well these actors were playing the role, especially given they were meant to be actors with little to no experience that were being auditioned here. When the audition was over, the men were asked by producers how they came to research their roles, a question which they offhandedly replied to with, quote, "Oh, it's easy. We are professional robbers, so we know what to do and how to not get caught too," unquote. Needless to say, the two gentlemen were not what the production team were looking for, telling them they were a little bit overqualified for the role. The series didn't only focus on true crime, though. The producers and directors felt often that each segment was like producing a mini movie of the week. The production team were focused on the show being able to mix things up and keep things fresh for the audience, and this is no doubt why it ran for so long. The original series was shot on film, allowing the team to add realistic special effects and practical effects too. On one occasion, the production team blew up an entire abandoned church building, where they perhaps went a little bit overboard on the pyrotechnics. The explosion that resulted would accidentally cause windows in the same neighborhood to explode out of the houses, with pieces of wood and glass flying and hitting the production crew, the producer, director, several extras, and a group of locals who were observing the shoot. The producer on set almost got seriously wounded by a piece of wood that pierced him during the incident. Another incident on set occurred in 1993 when an episode was shot featuring a segment about sightings of Bigfoot. The production team rented the Rick Baker-created Bigfoot costume from the Harry and the Hendersons TV show to use during filming for their episode. If you have seen the show Harry and the Hendersons, then you will be familiar with how realistic it looked at the time. While shooting the actor in the suit, customers at a nearby bar, who admittedly may have had a few alcoholic beverages at the time, saw the actor in the suit, and thinking it was the real deal, began to chase the actor down to try and kill it. The production crew, whilst thinking the incident was quite amusing, had to stop the townsfolk from killing their actor on set. I'm pretty sure the actor in that heavy suit, who had to do some hard running, didn't find the incident as amusing as the production crew, however. Another huge key to the success of the series was Gary Malkin's theme music. If you are my age and are familiar with Unsolved Mysteries as a kid, then you will almost certainly have a reaction just by hearing the music play it at the start of each episode. We knew that shit was going to get weird and creepy real quick. Over the years, the theme music has changed slightly, but at its core, it's still the eerie and memorable bass score we all know and love, or hate. Though you always know it's Unsolved Mysteries when you hear it. Unsolved Mysteries ran in its original format from January 1987 to August 1997. During that initial 10-year run, Robert Stack became just as synonymous with the show as its theme tune or the subject each episode showed. The fans who had grown up watching him over those 10 years both respected him and considered him genuine and the real deal. He never came across as fake, showbiz, or camp in his role as host. The showrunners for the original 10 seasons say that Stack saw his role the same way that the host of a live theatre performance would see theirs. He was the master of ceremonies, so to speak. Weekly, he would lead viewers through a surreal, chilling, and eerie group of real-life stories. With the viewer acknowledging that real life was just as terrifying as the movies, but with Stack guiding you along the way, never holding back and always telling the truth without sugarcoating things. Robert Stack would be the only host for the series up until Virginia Madsen joined him in 1999, and once the series had moved to CBS in an attempt to garner higher ratings. Over the years since its inception, Unsolved Mysteries has featured hundreds of mysteries and featured over 1,000 criminal cases, with several of them actually being solved as a direct result of the show featuring them. Update episodes would also be added to the series roster after season 10, where updates regarding earlier episodes and crimes would be provided to the public. Even more so, mysteries are still being solved many years after the show's cancellation due to reruns and the episodes airing on streaming services. For a short period of time, Unsolved Mysteries also aired a spin-off show called Final Appeal from the files of Unsolved Mysteries. This show was all about people who were wrongfully convicted of crimes and actually innocent. As I previously mentioned, Unsolved Mysteries moved from NBC in 1997 to CBS. But it didn't just stay there either. It was one of those network shows that moved around on a number of occasions. While it began life on NBC in 1987 and would stay until 1997, that same year it would move to CBS. Ratings started off poorly, which is why after two seasons there, it added Virginia Madsen, though even that wasn't enough to keep the show alive. Fun fact, When the episodes that featured Madsen are aired in reruns, they now actually dub Robert Stack over Madsen's narration. In July 2001, the show moved for the third time for two seasons to the Lifetime Network, but was again cancelled in September 2002. Spike TV revived Unsolved Mysteries again in 2008 for three seasons until cancelling again in October 2010. This time with Dennis Farina, another crime movie and TV show actor, as host. This was because, sadly, Robert Stack passed away in 2003 from cancer. Finally, in July 2020, Netflix brought back the show with Stranger Things producer Sean Levy at the helm, with the show's original creators reprising their roles in the show's development too. This series is in a slightly different format now, as each episode is only one mystery instead of two or three, as was the original format in the 90s. There is also no host any longer, though as a touching tribute, a shadow of Robert Stack is seen in the Netflix opening intro for each episode. The new version of Unsolved Mysteries has a slick style, a high budget, and keeps with the recreation and interview format. It's proved to be hugely popular for the streaming service. It will return with another series later this year. Unsolved Mysteries has never really gone away. It has been there, lurking and ever-present in the background for more than 30 years. From its new series on Netflix to the reruns on Tubi, Amazon Prime and YouTube, as well as a presence on various other streaming platforms. Additionally, its tip line and ability to send information has never gone away either. Now, if you go to the unsolved.com website, you can easily submit tips and or mysteries for the new Netflix series. Unsolved Mysteries was unique, but it would go on to inspire an entire genre of documentary-style content that would introduce viewers to the strange, mysterious, and chilling. I am not ashamed to admit that it had a huge impact on me and the inspiration for this very podcast. To this day, it's still helping solve mysteries and crimes. It gave and continues to give fans a look into a number of strange phenomena that they may have never heard of before and access to stories that gave them nightmares and dark daydreams. It also gives its viewers a look into the possibilities that were beyond the norm and outside of their humdrum everyday existence. It certainly gave hope that loved ones who had disappeared could be found again, and the foreknowledge that there were agencies, law enforcement, community groups, and average people out there were willing to help total strangers when it came to doing the right thing. And long may it continue to do so. To be clear, this episode is not in any way affiliated with Unsolved Mysteries, its producers, Netflix, or any other entity involved in the creation of its show. But that said, we are a team that deeply appreciates the work that the Unsolved Mysteries production has done over the years. Has it seemed cheesy at times? Sure, but that's down to everyday people being used to film the reenacted scenes. That doesn't mean the stories are any less real, however. If you can get beyond the, at times, quite hokey production value, then what you have at its heart is a gripping show attempting to bring the astonishing into everyone's homes. The team here at Dead Soul Social Club are massive fans of the show and its original trailblazing into the creation of a genre that now grabs hundreds of millions of people the world over. For this, we salute Unsolved Mysteries and will continue to be there whenever any new episode is. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.